Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, bubba.
Hey, bubba.
Man, good to hear you today. We're back on the air. We're getting started again. Today, we're going to talk about preaching, talk about the text for the first Sunday in Advent, December the 3rd, 2017. Bubba, why don't you tell them in just about a minute or so what's been going on with you, with me, with us, where we are, anything that's on your mind today. Just catch us up a little bit before we start.
Since the middle of the summer, we've both been kind of not employed in parish ministry for the first time in a long time.
Is that a pastorly way of saying unemployed for the
last
few months?
We are not employed in pastoral ministry. And it is. It's kind of a euphemism. I took a kind of what I called a self-funded sabbatical and been doing some stuff. We wrote a book about Advent. And
we did.
I think that probably stirred some of our thoughts, but also we just, you know, there comes a time every once in a while your life needs a shutdown and a reboot, kind of like a computer. So
we
consider ourselves rebooting, and I've taught a few classes. And
I'm interested. I wish you would. Tell us about the course you just got finished teaching. That's pretty good. And I'm gonna brag on my students in my Academy for Christian Excellence in a minute, too. But I think that'll catch us up to speed.
Well, you know what used to be called the pipeline or the standard route in the Lutheran ministry. You finish college, and either right then or a little while later, a few years later, you go to seminary, you go your 3 or 4 years, Lutheran's 4 years with an internship, and you get ordained and go on about ministry. Well, there are a lot of people who are taking alternate routes and other seminaries. There's what's called the TEAM program, Theological Education for Emerging Ministries, with people with a variety of different ways of having been trained. So last week, I did a week-long intensive for people from various backgrounds coming through the candidacy to become Lutheran pastors, and it was called Lutheran Parish Preaching, and it was exciting. It was 9 to 5 every day, readings beforehand. They're working on a project that I'll get in a few weeks, and it's pass-fail grade, and it's for the candidacy committee itself, and it's just I always wanted to do theological education, and I am, and that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, and I think before we ended the run of Lectionary Lab Live, I might have mentioned to everybody I was engaging in a new project. I've been working with a fine group known as the Christian Baptist Fellowship International. We're not all Baptists. We're mostly Christians, I think, but we definitely are a fellowship, an excellent organization under the leadership of our presiding bishop, Deshaun Toler. Our second presiding bishop is James Dixon, who is, of course, no stranger to our Lectionary Lab listeners. He is a pastor of Greater Faith Baptist Fellowship here in Gainesville, Florida. And having met many of the members of that group, leadership, et cetera, there was a need identified to help provide training for local church pastors. And I was asked to put together a course and have just enjoyed the dickens out of myself. I am having a good time. And so that's what you and I have been doing. Yeah. And we have missed talking about these texts. You are getting asked on a fairly regular basis. You have been to do some supply. You're, I know, considering possibilities of some interim ministry. I am doing the same, having some conversations. So we just wanted to come and do that which we love best, which is talk about the task facing preachers every week. And there's always a bit of a tension between being and I think everybody will get what I say by this, being a good pastor, there's a lot of things you have to do in pastoring your church, and then also being prepared to be a good preacher, at least to be as prepared and offer the best. What's our saying about Sundays?
They roll around.
They sure do roll around. They sure do roll around. So thank you all for listening in, and we will kick it off now and talk about the preaching coming up for this next week. It's the first Sunday of Advent, chance to begin again. Delmer, you mentioned our newest book, A Handful of Advent. If anybody hasn't picked that up yet on Amazon, I would encourage you to take a look at it. It is a nice little work with lots of resources for the season. And of course, every week we have brief commentary on all of the texts, a sermon by Delmer, and not that we're going to repeat everything we wrote in that text, but just to let you all know it's there. What about coming up this next Sunday on the first Sunday of Advent? What have you been thinking about? What are you working on getting ready to preach?
Well, you know, every week you think about where you are in the story. And the Christian year is a great way to kind of locate yourself and remind mm-hmm. yourself that every week is a part of a big picture.
Right.
It's not little individual beads on a string of pearls. You know, it's mm-hmm. you're coming back and back again and again to the story. And, Advent's a good time to remind yourself of that story
right.
as the overall, because it's the beginning, and particularly Advent itself has a narrative arc. So when you come to the first Sunday in Advent, you have to be thinking about four Sundays of Advent and Christmas Eve, and what is the story you're going to tell over that month, really?
Right.
And what I've been, every year, I start thinking about how different the way the lectionary and the liturgical season tells that story from the general culture, Western civilization tells that story.
Right.
In terms of, you know, I've started seeing pictures on Facebook of people putting up their Christmas tree, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Christmas season. But we've got this other thing. So what I've been thinking about is, how do you not just fuss about that?
you don't necessarily want to be a curmudgeon in the pulpit.
No. So you say, what is the story and how do I interweave this narrative arc, which is a section in our book called The Narrative Arc? How do we weave that into what's going on in the culture? So with this first Sunday, you're trying to take a look at that beginning of that narrative arc. And this is where the contrast is the greatest.
Right.
You know, people have just, you got Christ the King coming up right after Thanksgiving, and people have just had the Christmas parade and seen Macy's and they're shopping. Where I live, everybody orders from Amazon and everywhere else, and a lot of the good stuff, because I live out in the middle of nowhere, so people order a lot. You see UPS flying everywhere delivering stuff.
Yeah.
People are ordering and getting the pictures and making plans and all that. And then you get this text, these texts that are, you know, judgment and
it's
and it's dark.
Yeah. Stuff, you it know? Is to
those
say
those days after that suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. To say the least, it is a disconnect.
It's a disconnect.
I think you have to recognize that approaching the Advent texts. And
right.
I think one of the things I want to do, I want to realize that's a fundamental tension that's going to be between these texts and where most of our people are coming in to worship out of the secular context and the holiday season, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things you and I often say in our workshops and in our conversations with each other is, but it is at the tension points that right. some of the most fruitful opportunities for exploring the text come. And that's how I would want to encourage us to think about the beginning of this Advent season. It is right. disjointing. It is jarring. It does feel at sometimes a little bit down. And yet, let's explore that tension. Let's look at it a little bit.
And that tension, though, goes all the way back to the first Christmas, if we mm-hmm. want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the day of the Lord? If you talk, you know, is the day of the Lord a day, a bad day or a good day?
Right.
You know, if you think you're the righteous and the day of the Lord is when the Lord's going to come and whoop up on the bad guys, then
whoop, whoop, that's go like get a good day. Go but
what
get
if, what if you get surprised and find out you're not one of the good guys? And, you know, you're going to get it. I had, and that's that tension. And what does it mean? Is God coming to punish or to rescue? That's that whole dynamic. And, you know, and we kind of push down the judgmental side of that. And we put the nice baby and all these nice stories. And yet, from the very first Christmas, the whole question is, the day of the Lord is coming. And what does the Messiah mean? And I never thought of this before. And until I was thinking about today, the first Home Alone movie, which of course I watched with my guys are in their 30s. So we watched this, you know, a lot. You know how kids are with movies, yeah. You know, and we watched this a lot. And I just suddenly had this figure. You remember the old guy that lived, the grandfathery guy that he kept seeing and he was afraid of? And, you know, and I thought, that beard, you know, that old stern God figure. And all through, he's scared to death of this old guy. And at the crucial moment, the old guy comes and has the shovel, and it turns out to be his rescuer.
Right.
Bad news, good news. Where is God? Who is God coming in these stories? So today, the first day of Advent, it's that whole question of the day of the Lord is coming, and is it good news or bad news? And, you know, you can play with Christmas is coming. For some people, it's good news. For other people, it's bad news. What's the, you know, we've turned it into a battle. It's a battleground. But actually, what we're battling over is whether we get to have a Victorian semi-German Christmas or not.
Yeah.
Because all the images that people argue about in the general culture about what real Christmas is were invented by Charles Dickens and, you know, Queen Victoria and Albert, who was German.
Right.
You know, and a lot of this mix. And up until then, you know, it's as American as apple pie to ban Christmas. The Puritans did it.
Yeah, for real.
Just because they didn't want anybody to have fun. They just thought it was an obscene way to, to honor Christ.
Practically,
you know?
A heathen observance. Yeah.
Bacchanalia and all this. And it wasn't Christian. So these people want to put Christ back into Christmas. Well, that's been an argument for a long time.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So a lot of the tension with the gospel lesson is God is the one who comes. But does God punish or rescue?
Right.
And the question is, and what it calls us to is not a decision, but tells us to keep awake, to wait, and to watch. And I think a really, really, for me, important question about all of that is, how do you wait?
How does one wait?
How do you wait? What kind of waiting? Is it a waiting where you just sit in suffering and look to the sky and look for the, you know, look for the rescuer and you sit there, why me, you know? Or do you wait? And I had some images that came to mind as I was thinking about that. Do you wait like a farmer who's what we used to call laid by the crop? Laid by means you've cultivated. You've planted, you've hoed, you've done everything you can do. There's nothing else you can do until it's ready to harvest.
There you go.
You just have to wait. Do you wait expectantly with faith in what you've done? Or do you wait, hope, you know, sort of like desperately wondering if you'll survive? Do you wait like a baker? You know, it's part of my Thanksgiving is baking stuff. So you put stuff together and you do everything you do, and you got the oven hot, and you put it in the oven. There's a point at which there's nothing you can do
until it comes
out of the oven.
You got to let the heat and the elements do their work, and you hope it's going to turn out okay, and everybody's going to like it, and it'll be nutritious. And
And you don't hope in desperation, though. You know, you don't hope because you got no other option. If you know you've done what you're supposed to do, you do wait. And you stay awake. You can't fall asleep. Let it burn, or you know, images come to mind.
Yeah.
Or John, you and I, do you wait like a parent of a child who's between 15 and 25 or 30.
Yeah.
You know, how are they going to turn out? And it's hard to tell. And you try to have confidence as my daddy put it one time, you have confidence in your raisins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you raise the children and you hope it comes to fruition at some point. And he said, Daddy, I remember Daddy said, yeah, I was kind of rough when I was about 20 till 25 or so. And I just figured y'all would be too.
Just figured you would be too. That's it. Well, and I think you make a good point with that. And I was just thinking, how many times have you and I, and probably many of the other pastors listening to us, given that advice to parents in our parishes? You know, they come to us and they're expressing their anxiety. And you know, so Johnny's a senior in high school this year, getting ready to go off to college, and I won't be able to watch him. And saying, you know what, you've pretty well done your work. Now you got to trust. You got to trust that. So all of those are really good aspects, I think, of waiting. And I think it's fruitful as we're considering what we're going to preach this week to continue to dig around different images of the waiting, of the tension. Yep. For me, particularly sparked by reading the Corinthians text this week.
Right.
I read that and Paul is encouraging the church to look forward to the coming of Christ. Of course, at this time is what we now call the second coming.
Yeah.
We don't want to forget that Advent is preparation for a coming. And it always has this dual
edge. Both comings going on.
That's right. We're getting ready for the Christmas season. Yes, we're preparing to celebrate the coming of the Christ child. But church, don't forget, and this is what the texts do for us, don't forget that Christ is coming again. And that's why these warnings take on something of a stern edge. And, you know, it's a little. And so I was thinking, reading the Corinthians passage, of the kind of waiting and expectation that I know I've experienced. And I think probably with a little thought, we could bring this home to the people in our pews. There's a really big event coming, something that you're excited about. Probably one of the first times I can remember experiencing this was waiting to turn 16 years old and get that driver's license. Now, those of us that grew up in small towns and on the farm and whatever, we'd probably been driving around for a while, but still, I'm going to get my license. I'm going to be legal. And man, the places I'm going to go. And then all of a sudden you start thinking, boy, this is more than driving around the farm. It's more than driving around the block or across my little hometown. And you get this sense of responsibility coming along with that. So there's anticipation, but there's a little bit of dread, a little bit, you know, when we were young and expecting children and you're waiting on the birth of a child, you're excited and, you know, you've had a baby shower and you've done all of this. You get closer and you go, wow, number one, is this baby going to be all right? And we know that even in this day of modern medicine, not all births go well.
Yeah.
And there are certainly people who experience that. But even so, once you, I don't know how it was for you, Delmer. How did you feel the first time they put young Lowell, David Chilton, into your arms?
Well, since he had little to do with it, even if he hears this, it won't embarrass him too much. But we were at the seminary. And it was when I brought him home, and Deborah was asleep. We were in little seminary apartments. There's an elementary school across the street. Mm-hmm. And The Lion King had just come out. You remember all of that back in the 80s? And it was a full moon night, and I got that boy out of that crib. He was less than a week old. And I walked out in the middle of the playground at midnight in Columbia, South Carolina, and kind of held him up over my head and prayed. And I am not, as most people can tell you, that's out of character, shall we say. I'm not a demonstrative and ritual inventing kind of guy in those terms. I'm not theatrical. That's the term. And there was nobody watching. And it was, I actually hadn't even thought about the Lion King thing. I just was just held it up and I was just amazed and astounded. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's a great story. And you're praying and you're holding him up, and there's the sense of, boy, this baby's got a whole lifetime ahead of him. Yeah. I don't know if part of your prayer was, God, just don't let me screw it up.
The impression was, God said, put the baby down. Help me take care of that child. Don't do crap like this too often, I'll do my best to help take care of it. No.
Well, I remember holding young John William Fairless in my arms and being awed, and then thinking, I don't want to break him. I don't want to drop him. I mean, that's what I'm getting at. When we talk about the kind of expectation and anticipation that this season brings, and particularly if we're willing to work against the grain of the Hallmark homogenized Christmas story. Oh, everything's going to be right, and Mary's got this little baby, and it's so sweet, and the animals come, and the children sing, and it's risky business. It's exciting. It's scaring. Put the baby down gently. You know, don't drop them.
Right.
And so, with all of the images you've mentioned today, preachers, how do we get at that with our congregations? That's what this season is about. It's the birth of the story.
And you want to do it with that because they're not going to listen. I mean, the overwhelming thing is you just say they're wrong to celebrate Christmas, you know, the way they do.
No.
They're just going to go and go on. Yeah. So how do you get the message in? You know, all the way back in the 12th century, Bernard of Clairvaux talked about three things that we celebrate in Advent, and he kind of advocated in a book on preaching in Advent or sermons for Advent, bringing this into every sermon. And he had three things, nice little outline if you just keep it to yourself, but remembering, you know, you don't say here's point one, point two, point three, but think about it. And he said that there are three things you have to do in this season. Remember that Christ came in the flesh at Bethlehem. I would say that's what we major on in the general culture. We remember that story and we remember it and we remember it and we remember it. Yep. But he also says, it's also, we are about preparing for Christ to come daily in our community and in our hearts. Mm-hmm. Preparing for Christ to come daily. It's not something that happened once and stopped, and my Greek is always terrible. I can never remember the name of the tense, but the thing that happened and keeps on happening,
keeps on
continuing, aorist, whatever it is. Yeah, it's something that happened. And then, which means the third thing is we anticipate Christ coming again in the second coming. So every week in Advent, we're tying together that there is the Christ coming. Mm-hmm. In the flesh in Bethlehem, and we are 2,000 years removed, so we can't pretend it's in our future. We talk about it as in our past, and we celebrate what happened as the people in that time were getting ready. Then we focus on, well, how do we bring Christ present into this community we live in, and community in our hearts, you know? And all of that's tied up in anticipating Christ coming again in the second coming. And I think sort of having that there as you look at the text each week as you're preaching, you don't tell every part of that story every week, but it's a part of what you're trying to convey. By the time you get to Christmas Eve, people have been immersed in kind of not just the baby Jesus coming, but about Christ being born again in our lives, our being born again in Christ, to use a different form of language. Mm-hmm. And preparation for the second coming.
Yeah. I think if we get at that level of richness of what this coming means, Advent, a coming, one is coming, and that it is for us not only that remembering, but preparing and receiving daily. And if we can get any remembrance at all reflection at all from our parishioners of that anticipation of Christ coming again. I think a pastor has successfully engaged for Advent. And
I got excited about a couple of things just rhetorically with the, one is with the Isaiah text, and it's something you might could play with if you're going to play a, this and that, bad news, good news, that line 64:8 near the end of that text, that line says, yet, oh Lord, you are our Father, we are the clay, and you are the potter. And then in 9, now consider. So perhaps what we need to say, that's a rhetorical kind of device. The sermon, you know, whatever you base it on, you can talk about this over here. But yet God loves us. You got all this judgment, and yet God loves us. Let us consider Christ's coming. Another one that really leapt out at me, and it always does, and I'm always surprised because at my age, I forget things, which is a nice thing.
So you get to learn it again.
I get to learn it again and be just as excited I was the last time. Verse 3, verse 7, and then verse 19 in the psalm, and we skip a little bit of the psalm, so it comes in a nice rhythm, are all the same. Verse 3, verse 7, verse 19, and it's a three-point sermon. Restore us, O God, let your face shine that we may be saved. We get restored and we are saved. All of that kind of, so that's a great image for what does it mean for God to come?
Right.
What is happening? This is, you know, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
And you've talked about pretty much what I wanted to say about the Corinthians text. You know, I like that we'll be strengthened as we wait.
That's it. You don't have to. What you're waiting on is not to be gifted, is not to be, you know, for God to bring you something else that you need. Now, you have received these gifts. As we wait, yes, you're going to be strengthened. And God is the one who is faithful. There is a day coming. And so, you've hit that well and excellently. Anything else on the gospel? That's the one to me that's a little tough, but you've touched in and around it and mentioned it several times. I don't know if there was anything else specifically we want to throw in there. You started with this whole idea of staying awake and being alert. You know, that's if you are in a place where you need to major on the gospel text, that certainly strikes me as a fruitful thing. It's a good time to stay awake, pay attention.
I would say that first Sunday in Advent's not a good time to plunge into premillennial, postmillennial, then dispensational, either for or again. You don't want to make fun of, if depending on your tradition, it's not a time to make jokes about left behind, unless, you know, I mean, you just don't want to go too far down that road. You know, it's not, you might want to do that in a Bible study sometime. It's to say, I think you touch upon, this is about what does it mean for God to come? First or second time? What does it mean?
Anytime
for God to come into your life. Is it a good news or bad news? And move on. And as you might say, talk about what kind of images these are. But you don't want to try to get too hard to explain what any of this is about right now. It just doesn't do much. So that's the main one thing I want to talk about is that this is dire sounding stuff, but is there good news here?
Yeah.
What is the promise of the gospel?
For me, what this gospel text does in helping us interpret the theme of how are you waiting?
Okay. Yes,
what's the quality of your waiting? What are you doing? Is to realize that this being awake is not just about trying to stay up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's ridiculous. To me, it's about pay attention and watch going on. God might be up to more than you could possibly imagine. Let's use this season to wake up again, to pay attention, to be looking on. You've sung the whether you sing hymns of Advent or once we get to Christmas Eve and you sing the carols, sure, you've sung them for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years plus. But watch, look around, pay attention. God may be up to more than you could possibly imagine. That's the joy to me of this season of beginning again. The story begins again at Advent.
One of the things you ask about when you look at a gospel lesson is you say, why did the author, Mark, choose to tell this story? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good time, ways after the time of Jesus. And he includes this line. I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. And it's a good, even the earliest date, it's a long, good while. Yeah. A lot of that generation has passed away.
Absolutely.
And they're trying to balance off. This isn't the way I thought it was going to be. Dr. Phil? How's that working out for you?
How's that working for you? Yeah.
Jesus is coming back any day now. Let's just hang loose. Then there's, persecution and bad stuff happening. How do you interpret the bad stuff happening? Jesus has been here, born, raised, crucified, resurrected. Yep. I'm sending the Holy Spirit on you. I'll be back. How's that working out for you? Mm-hmm. And this year we're thinking Houston, the flood in Houston, Puerto Rico, how's that working out for you? Mm-hmm. Flood, you know, you hurricanes in Florida, you live in Florida. Oh man, a shooting in Las Vegas, Sutherland Springs, Texas. You're sitting and shaking your head. Mm-hmm. How's that working out for you? This is what this text is about.
Yep.
It's about how do you hold on? That Christ is, as we say in the Eucharistic prayer, Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. Mm-hmm. How do we hold on to those promises?
Absolutely.
How do we wait?
That's it. Well, Bubba, we have managed as usual to talk our way through all these texts and a number of ideas. I hope that maybe as you all have listened and joined the conversation with us, that something has triggered for you. At the risk of over-promoting, but I'm going to anyhow. I do want to, this is the last time I'll talk about the new book, A Handful of Advent. I do it because when you just mentioned the Eucharistic prayer, Delmer, I want to say not only is this about the text for Advent, not only is it sermons for these Sundays, there are some excellent additional worship materials in here, including a really nice, potentially Christmas Eve service that includes communion. There's a nice, there's some good prayer language in here. There's devotional language, a great rites of preparation to use during the season of Advent. And I just want to brag on my colleague here who has not only a great appreciation for all things liturgical, but has a gift for putting stuff together. And It's a
good thing we on radio because I'm red as a beet right now.
Yeah. Well, it's a great book of resources, and you've still got time if you don't already have a copy to check it out on Amazon.com. Get it. We wrote it so that it could be used and be helpful. Well, Bubba, I have enjoyed it, and I think we've talked around these texts about as much as we can. We hope everybody is going to embrace and enjoy your preaching during this season. I don't reckon there's much for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Lock and Key by Silent Partner. We go out this session with The Mighty Kingdom, performed by Audionautics and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License via YouTube.com.